hockey. Yeah.
My favorite.
It's Judd's Hockey Show.
And welcome into another edition, post-game edition, of Judd's Hockey Show. Late night edition. Zolgad, Declan Goff. I sense that Declan has something on ice near him. I hear it. Ooh, that looks good. What are we drinking?
Tequila. As much as I would love to go with some vodka for my guy Kirill Kaprizov.
Yeah.
I don't have the ponies to go up to some vodka, so, but tequila.
Tequila on Cinco de Mayo.
Yes. So
still
happy holidays.
Time left, an hour left.
Happy Kirill. A little tequila, a little nightcap here as we wrap up another wild game against the Golden Knights.
So explain something to me, Declan. Mm-hmm. Why? So the Wild lose tonight 3-2 in OT. There's certainly a lot to talk about. Some guys had a good games. Some guys had bad games. I think the head coach made a questionable, again, decision in OT. Kevin Fiala did not play, although it sounds like, I guess the report is, we shouldn't be too concerned about that. So why is my only desire right now to talk about one guy? Why is my only desire after a loss, in which they still got a point, but my only desire right now is to talk about Kirill Kaprizov and the game that we saw tonight. And can I start you off with this? Because it has nothing to do with two goals.
Okay.
I absolutely love the fact that I think the Golden Knights, rightfully so, thinking that there is a chance that they're going to match up against the Wild in the playoffs, came out tonight, and it looked like they thought, you know what, tonight we're going to do, we're going to show Kirill Kaprizov who's boss here. You know, we're going to take him off his game. We're going to live rent-free in Kirill's head and make him think about the fact that we are going to cross-check him, we're going to slash him, we're going to hit him. Now, the Blues hit him and contained him a little bit, but not over the top. Vegas took it to the next level tonight. And damn it, we both sat there in the press box and watched, and he not only pushed back, it actually, I think, backfired and motivated him more. Like, he works his butt off. I am not saying that he takes shifts off, because he does not. But I actually think that what Vegas intended to do, which was clearly intimidate Kirill Kaprizov, Dex, I think it backfired. And I think Kirill Kaprizov showed us another level of what he's willing to do to win tonight. And that's where I'd like to start, because he's a 24-year-old guy. I mean, he's not an 18-year-old who just stepped into the league. He's got experience professionally in Russia. But I love the fact that a guy in his first year in this league, a team's like, we are going to take you off your game. And he's like, oh, no, you're not. And in fact, yeah, I'm actually going to step my game up.
The plan to shut down Kirill Kaprizov should be every opposing team's number one MO going into a game against the Wild, and it should be the team's opposing team's mission in the postseason. Shut down Kirill Kaprizov, see what happens. You were out without Kevin Fiala too, so you're without your second most dynamic player going into the game tonight, and that was an unexpected loss. Kirill Kaprizov had a lower body injury. Friend of the show, Michael Russo, said that it's nothing to worry about. I bet he's hopefully back against Anaheim here on Friday. But you were without Kevin Fiala. So even now, if you're Vegas, the task gets easier. Shut down Kirill Kaprizov. Who's the next guy we got to worry about? You know, Nick Bonino? You know, who's the next guy in line that the Wild have to really be too scared of? And for two periods, you know what? They mostly did their job. The second period, just like in classic Wild fashion this year, has been a gong show. They just, for whatever reason, fall asleep at the wheel in the second period. I thought the opening 20 minutes, which, I mean, we could get into later, which was just penalty minutes and fights, and that all started, too, those fights all started, Judd, because Kirill Kaprizov took a nasty cross-check into the boards. Marcus Foligno stands up for his teammates. All hell breaks loose. Even Kaprizov, who sweeps the leg of White Cloud. I mean, he was getting pounded on by White Cloud. Kaprizov, who's built like an ox, stands up, grabs the leg, spine busters, if you will, him down to the ice, and then starts wailing on him, too, and almost gets a five-minute major, but then it gets reduced to a minor call, coincidental minors for roughing with him and White Cloud, which, by the way, wow, NHL officiating, you actually got the call right after looking at it. Bravo to you. That doesn't happen a lot. And I know the refs were mostly bad tonight. Here's my problem, though, with that. I'm so sick, and I can't stand blaming the refs for a loss. I can't. It was horrific officiating. I understand it was really, really bad these last two games, but Kirill Kaprizov nearly willed, literally said, hey, get on my stick, get on my back, I will will this team to victory. That second goal off the faceoff circle, I mean, that's traffic, there's people, there's bodies, There's people hitting you and slashing you, and he still finds a way to beat Marc-Andre Fleury, one of the best goaltenders in the league. That is a superstar play. That's not luck. A lot of people like to see hockey, oh, it's just random bounces, and sometimes weird things happen, right? No, that is 100% skill and 100% I'm going to take over this game for my own team right here. And it's too bad the Wild weren't able to get 2 points tonight. But just that sequence, two goals in what I believe 2 minutes and 28 seconds, whatever the heck it was. I mean, just insanely, insanely impressive. And it was, again, the Kirill Kaprizov show. They went down going into the third period trailing again, and it still didn't matter. The Wild had a lead going into the last 5 minutes, but they just couldn't hold on to it after, yes, a questionable penalty call. But regardless, my takeaway is Kirill Kaprizov is still just absolutely unbelievable. He's a superstar. Jason Robertson does not belong in the same conversation as this guy. He
tied the game, Kaprizov did, at 1-1 at 11-13 at third period, and then at 13-23 scored again on the goal, Declan, that you're talking about. I want to talk about the first goal that he scored to tie the game, because again, it was a goal scored around the net. And if you go back and look at that, play one was basically from the other side of the net. Zuccarello attempted to set up Kirill, was unsuccessful, but both of them, to their credit, stuck with it and basically switched sides. And so now Kirill was on the right instead of the left-hand side, and Mats Zuccarello had also moved. And if you go back and look, Zuccarello got that puck across, and Kaprizov basically, and this is the thing that floors me about him, is, and I've told you this before, he can shoot in a phone booth, meaning he can contort his body and his stick to be as close to his chest and still get a strong shot off at times, which is very hard. In this one, his hand-eye coordination was so damn good that he basically batted the puck like a baseball into the net. And again, that's not luck. That is the skill. Here is my plea, and I don't think that this is going to be a problem, but this is a plea to hockey fans in the state and a reminder to us as well. Do not take what this young man does for granted, because he makes it look so damn simple that it's easy to say, of course, it's Kirill. Of course he made that move. He made a play today or tonight, it didn't work, but in which he basically tried to deke out the defenseman by putting the puck between his legs and through them. It's incredible. There is nothing, to your point, Dex, there's nothing about luck involved here. Like nothing he is doing. And I'm not saying that luck is not part of the sport of hockey, because it is, but there is nothing Kirill Kaprizov is doing that has anything to do with luck. He has scored, and the goals he scores are not like, it's a greasy goal and it's just, no, he works hard. They are greasy, but look at what he is able to do. Again, I would ask you this, how many Wild players in the 20-year history of this franchise could have knocked that puck out of the air into the net? And I guarantee you, if you went back to the X right now and asked him to do it again, he could. This is what I can't get past this. Like, we're so fortunate right now. Ant has a huge game, and the Wolves lost to the Grizzlies tonight, but Ant is going off at target center, which is great. Justin Jefferson for the Vikings is such a special player. Byron Buxton, I mean, the Twins aren't good now, which really stinks, but Byron Buxton is great. And Kirill Kaprizov is doing things that, forget rookies, most players can't do. But I can't tell you how important it is that he, as football people like to say, Declan, he put on tape tonight that if your modus operandi against him in the playoffs is going to be, we're going to beat you up, Kirill, he's basically told the Golden Knights, bring it on. Let's do it. And Foligno, and I love this, Foligno stood up for him, but he stood up for himself too. He was going to do whatever he had to do to basically send them the message, bleep you, I'm coming at you. And I think it actually, he had a better game tonight because of the fact that they thought, we'll slow him down and intimidate him. And he's like, no, you won't. And in fact, I'm going to come back at you and I'm going to have another huge game. This now makes the life of shutting down a player even more difficult who's this good. And my final thought on this is, when teams do this to your guy, Fiala, he gets mad, but he does dumb things. Like, he could be goaded into dumb penalties. He's still really good. But I'm saying, if you try and shut him down, he gets frustrated and mad. and cross-checks guys and does things. Kirill basically just comes back at you.
Yeah.
Like he's not like, well, I'll get you. No, he just comes back at you. He will not be pushed around. And that going into the playoffs is a game changer.
The demeanor of Kirill doesn't change throughout the course of the game. And I think that's the biggest difference. Going back to the scuffle that happened in the first period, it's very easy, I think, for star players to cower. It's very easy for stud players to just say, hey, I know my role. All right, I'm the goal scorer. I'm the playmaker. I'm not going to drop the gloves. I'm not going to get myself into trouble. And he literally, White Cloud, you know, isn't, again, just a world beater, but he's a big body dude that's going to push some people around. That's his role. And he shoves him to the ground. After mm-hmm. getting also, I don't think it was White Cloud that cross-checked him. I believe it was
Haig.
Haig was the one who
got
did the
fight.
Who got in the cross-check. Foligno yep. steps in, helps out his boy. And then Kaprizov, who's, you know, trying to just get out of the way with this whistle, gets taken down in a nasty fashion. And yeah, again, says, you know what? All right, like, you want to scrap with me? I'm going to scrap with you. And that's where I said, like, he doesn't take BS. You know, right. It'd be very easy for him to just say, oh, I'm here. Look at this kerfuffle happening.
Marcus,
I don't want anything
Marcus,
part of this.
Do all my work
yeah.
for me.
And Foligno dropping the gloves twice in the first 15 minutes. To your point about Fiala, what I love about Fiala when he plays pissed off is you can see it. You can see that he's pissed off and he's trying and he wants to do something. To your point, though, sometimes that anger with one day being past May the 4th be with you, that anger can be used against you, and yes. you can end up doing really, really dumb things.
Yes.
And Fiala has a tendency to do that. Kaprizov might overcompensate for something, might make a turnover, but he's not going to take a penalty. He's not going to do something that really puts the team behind the eight ball. I do think the criticism of Fiala in those situations can be completely overblown, and I think that's what really, really frustrates me, because you're looking at a guy who already has 20 goals and is a dynamic playmaker. But Kirill is on a completely different level. This is not just, oh, it's Jason Robertson and Kirill Kaprizov, and now all of a sudden it's become a tight race. Look, the Dallas Stars are coming off a run to the Stanley Cup. They have studs up and down their roster. If you remove Jason Robertson, the Stars are exactly who the Stars are right now. I am willing to say that. I know there's no wins above replacement metric that is universal in hockey yet, and I'm sure Jason Robertson is not a negative player. But my eye test and what I have seen from the Dallas Stars over the last 3 years is I know they are just fine without Jason Robertson. I now know, after watching 55 games of the Minnesota Wild, the Wild are just okay without Kirill Kaprizov. With Kirill Kaprizov, they have entered the conversation as a team that can make a run in the playoffs. It's not just a cute team that's the fringe last team into this ooh, cute little Honda Western Conference. This is a team that is literally competing with Vegas and Colorado still for the top spot in the West and for a possibly home ice advantage in the first round of the playoff series. So my point is, if you are a Dallas Stars fan and you love Jason Robertson, that's great. I'm glad you have another guy to pair with your great studs in Jamie Benn and Sagan. Good for you. Honestly, good for you. But Kirill Kaprizov has lifted this team up to a completely different stature. He deserves Hart Trophy votes. He's not going to be a finalist, but he absolutely deserves Hart Trophy votes.
Yes.
So like the Calder Trophy, like, oh, I can't believe we're having this debate over Robertson and Kaprizov, and I'm here for you there. I 100% agree with you. Kaprizov should be unanimously the rookie of the year, but he means so much to this team because he's literally he almost dragged them to a win. The Wild shouldn't have gotten 2 points tonight. Kirill Kaprizov should have gotten the 2 goals and the 2 points and the key to the city if you would have pulled this off tonight.
Absolutely, yeah. So to the point about the Stars, okay, the Stars in the Discover Central, if we're doing the sponsors in the Discover Central, the Dallas Stars have 3 games left and they have 56 points. They are now 4 points behind the Nashville Predators for the final playoff spot. They are likely going to miss the playoffs. Okay.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Wild, as we speak right now, has 71 points. They have 4 games left and they are firmly entrenched they've clinched a playoff spot. They are 1 point behind the Avs for second place, so that they still, with 4 games left, very much have a chance to get home ice, and they are 5 points behind the Golden Knights. The point being is the Dallas Stars with Robertson are about to miss the playoffs. If you took Kirill Kaprizov off this Wild team, they are right now, in my opinion, battling the St. Louis Blues, who, by the way, have 56 points. The Wild's at 71. If you take Kirill Kaprizov off this team, the Wild, I think, is battling for the fourth and final playoff spot. So, yeah, he is going to – Kirill Kaprizov deserves – he's not going to win it, and he shouldn't, but he deserves MVP votes. And I don't think that that's a stretch. I don't think that that's a reach. And if you take him off, if you go through the superstars in this league, McDavid and Dreisaitl in Edmonton, Matthews in Toronto, and just go down that list.
Sure.
And what those teams would be like without those marquee star players, Kirill Kaprizov not on the Wild would be as detrimental. So, yes. I mean, all those teams would suffer, but if you had, so like if your best player, if your only star, not superstar, but star, was Fiala, this team would be in a different predicament completely. And that's why this kid is so special. And what I love, and it's probably going to end at some point, I would guess. What I love about Kaprizov, Dex, is that we are finding out different things about his game and about his demeanor and about his style all the time still. And that's why tonight I just was giddy watching a guy who basically said, oh, you're going to try and beat me up, huh? Good luck with that. I'm going to own this game at times. And so, yeah, I just, the Wild lost. I'm getting a little bit tired of having to see them rally constantly. That's not a good idea. I don't think that that's a formula for playoff success. I'm not saying across the board that they're always playing poorly. Tonight was a playoff game. It was physical like a playoff game. But I would like to see them take some leads and hold said lead. And I know that it's not going to be 4 goals or 3 goals, but it'd be nice to have a 1 or 2 goal lead at times and not be trying to scurry back. All of that being said, my biggest, this is like when you first meet that special person, right? Kirill's like that special person. And it's like, you just keep discovering, oh, we have this in common and we have that. Oh, and you like this food or you like that restaurant. And I do too, right? That's what Kirill is here, man. We keep discovering things about him. And so far, I don't think there have been any real things where you're like, oh, okay, that's a warning sign. Like, okay, that's going to be a bad, bad Kirill. Like, what's the bad Kirill?
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Our guy JD comments on our YouTube. By the way, if you're watching us on YouTube, thank you very much. We'll be doing a lot of these Wild breakdowns in the playoffs. If you're not ready to subscribe to it, subscribe to Score North MN. You'll get some Wilds information. Twins, Wolves, Vikings, all MN sports, Mackie and Judd, Score North. We're helping you out here. But he says, what do you think about Kaprizov being a top 5 overall player in the NHL in 2 to 3 years? Honestly, it's probably 100% in question, man. It is 100% a possibility, especially with where this league is headed. Like, look, Ovechkin, I think guys like Ovechkin and Crosby aren't going away anytime soon, even though they're up there in age. Even if they slow down, they're still above average, much above average. That's even selling them extremely short. They're still extremely game-changing players. But if we're talking about, and there's the good thing about the NHL right now, I think, is there's a lot of great young studs. Yeah, Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl. You can go up and down the list. Even Rantanen and McKinnon in Colorado, too, are still young guys. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And this team has been so starved for that for such a long time that's why this is so special. And I think there's even maybe some people who maybe aren't Minnesota Wild fans, and they see the box score, they see some highlight reels, they go, oh, wow, this Kaprizov special. But they probably are a little confused, and they say, like, well, is he really this good? Does he really mean this much to your franchise? And when this team has only had just so many good players, they have had a lot of actually good players. Mm-hmm. They have never had many great, game-changing, franchise-altering players. Mikael Granlund was never a great player. He's a Hall, a very, very good player, and that is his ceiling.
At his best when he came to play.
Right.
That's the difference in Kaprizov. He always comes to play.
You know, even guys like Kevin Fiala is probably mostly in the same tier. Now, he's still young enough that he might be able to break that mold and be even a better player than the core of Wild players that are no longer with the team. But But you can see it with Kaprizov. The evidence is right there in your face. And yes, he's 100% a player that could be dominating this league in 2 to 3 years. And that's where I'm curious where the contract talks go this summer. Because you lock him up now. They're gonna try to lock him up right now. And you know what? Kirill's young enough and not naive enough. I don't want to use the term naive, but this is a new situation for him. He's not going to play poker. And I don't think his agent's going to be in the business of being, a mini Scott Boris, just wait. Just wait 2-3 years and you'll go cash in New York or go cash in LA. I don't think so. I highly doubt it.
I mean, but he's so good that I could see him. I hope that they can do 8 years, which is now, thanks to a couple of contracts that I think we've talked about before in this league, 8 years is now the max. Okay. But that being said, there's a chance that they'll go, let's do a short deal. I mean, worst case it too is that they basically decide we'll do a deal that will potentially walk him up to his free agent years to look. Cause I mean, this kid is going to cash in, but on the question. Yeah. I think right now he is one of the better players. I think he's not probably top five, but he's going to hit that, he's going to creep into that next five probably very soon, if not now. Cause again, I ask you this, if he's not on this team, you cannot tell me that this team is solidly in a playoff spot. I think they're still a decent team. I mean, the defensive core is good now. Goaltending is, thank God, pretty good now. I mean, compared to what we saw, it's Jacques Plante and Glenn Hall. But all of that being said, I don't know what the future holds there. I will say this. I've been saying now for a couple months, at least, Dex, that Kirill Kaprizov, hands down, the best player in Wild history. Don't tell me about Gabrick. I saw him play. He was very, very good. I really liked him a lot. But Kirill Kaprizov is the best player in the history of this franchise. And I'd like to amend that and apologize to the Kaprizov, entire Kaprizov fan base and family. Kirill Kaprizov right now is challenging to be the best player in the National Hockey League's history in the state. And here's the one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to eliminate Modano because he didn't come to fruition here. Because he was I think Mike is the best player in Stars franchise, and this includes Dallas, though, where he became just a stud.
Right.
But Mike Modano played the early years of his career here, started to come into his own, and then in 1993, the team moved, right? So I'm going to take him out because he's a Dallas Star. And I'm going to tell you right now that I think there's a case to be made that Kirill Kaprizov is the greatest player to wear a Minnesota NHL jersey who's going to be here. Bobby Smith was great. Neil Broughton was fantastic. All stars, okay? Dino in his prime was great. There's a lot of players that you could go down the list. And to your point from what you said, say, those were damn good players. But Kirill Kaprizov's skill set, I challenge you, outside of the fact that unless you try and force the conversation into Modano being a true North Star, Kirill Kaprizov, to me, yes, it's recency bias, but he brings so many different things. And we haven't even seen them all yet. And I think, Declan, the key to this whole thing is, I think Kaprizov gets in the conversation for one of the best players in the league if the Wild can make a playoff run. Because if you do that, then he's going to be seen nationally all the time.
Yep. And you're going to see two teams still try to shut him down. But I just still think, I mean, for God's sake, Judd, he was with Ryan Hartman tonight. And, Matt Zuccarello is a nice supplemental piece to Kirill Kaprizov, honestly. And credit to Kaprizov lifting up Matt Zuccarello to a degree. I think both of it works in side-by-side ways. Because Zuccarello had a bad year last year, but then he's now able to be the kind of player he was in New York, which he's a facilitator. Like, Matt Zuccarello is a facilitator. He's not a center, but he's a facilitator. He's a playmaker. He's going to set other people up. He's not going to shoot a ton, but he's going to set other people up. And it's what better player to be playing alongside of than Kirill Kaprizov? So I think, I don't think you're, and look, I was born in 92. The North Stars left when I was about 4 to 5 months old. Mm-hmm. I obviously have zero memory of that. My father grew up a big North Stars fan and loved Dino and loved Neil Broughton and loved all those guys. I only know Minnesota Wild hockey. I remember the day the Wild played their first game. I was about 8 years old then. I remember that very well. Marian mm-hmm. Gaborik is still probably my favorite Wild player of all time. And I think any most person born in the 1990s, late 90s, would probably say the same thing, that Marian Gaborik might be your favorite player. And if you're in the 2000s, it might be Zach Parise or Ryan Suter. And now, if you're someone who was born in the millennium, let's say in the last even 10 to 15 years, and you're now entering that fun stage, right? You're entering that stage where you're not just like, oh, sports, yay, I get to go to the game with my dad or my mom and my family, we get to watch a game. You're in that prime age where you're a teenager, you're starting to understand things a little bit more.
Yep.
And you get this is your first taste.
Oh, you know, anything, I'm so bitter at you.
If anything, this is, if you're a 14-year-old right now and you've been watching Wild hockey for the last 4 years, okay, even 4 years, and you don't even know anything that happened in even the Parise Suter beginning parts of the era when things were still good. You won a couple playoff series. There were some blips. Granlund's goal was awesome, but you know, you were too young to remember. You were a seven-year-old. You don't really remember that.
Sure.
Now you're seeing this superstar, and now this is what the bar is, right? I mean, I know it's the highest bar possible, but this is where you get to. This is what you get to see, and this is leaps and bounds. I can just tell you right now from the Wild franchise side. I can't speak for the North Star sides like you can, where you saw both of these teams come in and come and go, and superstars, and from Minnesota that went to Dallas, and obviously in Mike Modano. And Mike Modano, yeah, is the greatest hockey player probably that ever wore a Minnesota jersey, but he was only here for what, Judd, 4 years, 5 years?
I think it was 4 years.
4 or 5 years. And then
and he was starting to become, but I mean, he wasn't there yet. He became a Hall of Fame player in Dallas.
Yeah. And that's who he became. So this, I don't think your take is that far off. And it's been 55 games. Like, Marian Gaborik is probably has a case for the Hall of Fame. He's not first ballot by any means. You know, he's not going to get in the hockey Hall of Fame right away. That being said, I have to agree with you. Because the sad thing is, if you made a top five list right now of the greatest Minnesota Wild players, it's almost an insult that in that top five, Kirill Kaprizov is part of the list. Like, you know, it's kind of hilarious to me.
Well, yeah, because it's, Zach in Zach's prime here was good, but he's not mm-hmm. close to this class. I think the highest skill guys I've seen are Kaprizov, Gaborik, who had high skill. Fiala probably now is in that skill. So I'm not talking like greatest players. I'm just talking the skill set. Like the Wild came into this league when to be blunt about it, the game was bad. It was trapping. It was, and look, they did that as well. But I mean, go back, Declan, and watch sometime, just YouTube it. A snippet of the last Stanley Cup final before the lockout between Calgary and Tampa. It's unwatchable. But, I mean, that was the game. Goaltender equipment had become enormous. Teams were trapping. They were trying to win 2-1, 3-2. It was unwatchable. It was awful. And the Wild embraced that. And that's why in year three, they had, I think, personally, a ton of success, because if you embrace that style, you could win those games. Now, that playoff run was fun. Don't get me wrong about that. I'm not saying it was not fun. It was. But look at the style now and the continuous play and the moves we see and the skill we see. It's incredible. So I want to touch on a couple more things before we wrap up here. First of all, back to the officiating in these past two games, which you are correct, was bad, really bad. But I have a question about the hooking call on Zuccarello in the third period that led to the Riley Smith goal at 15:44 that tied the score at 2.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at that, first of all, he brings a stick. I think he brings a stick basically onto the breezer of the player, but he never really even truly hooks him. And here's my question. So what's done is done, and I am with you. Nothing drives me more nuts than the Homer guys that sit there and say, we got screwed by the officiating. You know what? Yeah, but I guarantee you that there were calls that the Golden Knights didn't like too, okay? But off of that call, here's what I want to know as we get closer and closer to playoff time. what's going to be a penalty in the playoffs?
Yes.
Like, is that a penalty? Like, is that a third period playoff penalty?
No.
Because if that's the case, you need to know that, right? Like, mm-hmm. you need to have an idea. Because the problem there with that call is if that ties a game in the third period in the playoffs, we got an issue about what's a penalty and what's not then.
Yep. And, you know, I'm watching the replay right now, my other laptop right now, the loop of it.
Look at you,
girl. Just trying to get a better gauge of it. And look, he lifts his stick a little bit. Nothing that would be egregious enough to be calling a penalty that late in the game. Yeah. What I want the most is those calls to not be there in the postseason. And yeah, the officiating has been bad. I despise the fact that that there's a narrative that referees go into a game rooting for another team.
Oh, that's stupid. I agree with you.
Take off your homer blinders. Take off your blinders there. But my God, how many penalty minutes were assessed tonight? Thousands. And I don't know if this was a league-wide thing that because of what happened with in Washington with New York, you know, I don't know if that was something that happened tonight. TJ Oshie scores a hat trick on the day that his father passes away, and unfortunately, that's going to be maybe the second lead story because of all the penalty minutes and all the fighting that happened in that game. To answer your question, I just hope that it's consistent, and I hope that in most cases, those whistles are put away. That's what I want. I want those whistles completely put away.
Well, I want penalties called when they're penalties. Mm-hmm. But don't be looking for penalties that don't exist. And it's ridiculous. If that call had gone against the Knights, I'd be equally as miffed. Like, but we need to know, and I know that I'm asking a question that the league is going to say, well, it depends on the crew and blah, blah, blah. But you need to know what a penalty is. Like, you need to know, are you going to call that crap? Because if you're going to call Zuccarello, if you go back, Dex, and look at the play that you're talking about right now, okay? Behind the play slightly in the shot that I saw, Spurgeon hooks a guy that's more egregious and a penalty than what Zuccarello did. So, like, let's clean this up right now and let's decide. And I am all for, if it's a penalty, call it. But that was garbage. And the officiating both ways that we saw these past two games is unacceptable for the playoffs. I know that the game moves fast and I know it's tough to call and I get all that and that's all well and good. But those two games were not officiated at a level that's going to get you a passing grade in a playoff game. And the last thing that you want to see is either team, the Wild or their opponent, cost a game because these buffoons screw up. The next thing I want to talk to you about is Cam Talbot. I still contend he's playing too much. I believe I will continue to say this. He's your playoff goalie. He's your starter. He's your number one. He is your number one. That is no longer a discussion. Okay. Yes. So this is not a plea for all. I think Kapo should be playing in the playoffs. Cam Talbot, though, I thought played great tonight. He made some fantastic saves, and he continues to track, at least for me, to show that in a playoff game, you don't have to, and this could change. So I'm telling you right now, because the pressure changes in the playoffs, but you don't have to go into every game worrying about, oh my God, can the goaltender match a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury or Jordan Binnington? You're now getting goaltending that I think should make you pretty confident. That being said, I hope that Kapo gets a few more starts, because there's no reason to ride Talbot into the ground before the playoffs start.
Since April 10th, Kapo Kakkonen has made just three starts. There's five games left. There's two against the Ducks, both those at home. There's two games at St. Louis next Wednesday and Thursday, and then your regular season for this division finally ends. Some teams end there this weekend because of the COVID outbreak. There's delayed responses.
Yeah, we have to see when the Wild's going to start too, just as far as the pause there, which could cause some problems if the pause is too long.
I am guessing that 2 weeks from the day, as we record late Wednesday night, almost into Thursday morning here, that 2 weeks from the day, we're probably watching playoff hockey. I don't know if the Wild play game one of their series, but I would envision 2 weeks from today, playoff hockey will be a thing in the NHL. To your point about Kapo, I thought he should have gotten the nod tonight. I really did. I thought Talbot was awful on Monday, and I know you're still playing for home ice advantage, and you're still possibly playing to win the division, but Cam Talbot hasn't played well against Vegas. All year long, he hasn't played well against Vegas. So at this point, give him a start. And now, with this division still in reach, I just have this horrible feeling that basically, until the Wild basically know their fate, he's gonna run Talbot out for the last four starts, which I honestly, I can't stand. If it was up to me, there's four games left, Kapo should start three of them. Kapo should absolutely start three of them, if not two of them, if not at least split them. He should be splitting these two starts here. Give Talbot some rest. Don't burn him into the ground. You know, Devan Dubnyk, it wasn't always that Dubnyk played so poorly in the postseason, but there is something to say when you start 30 games in the playoffs and you only won four of them, you know, or whatever it was, five or six of them. It was a horrible winning percentage. Give Kapo some time here, especially against the Ducks. I can see against St. Louis. I can see against St. Louis if there's still a chance to jump to get home ice advantage the last two games of the season. Your season's on the line. You got home ice advantage on the line. Go right and do that. Against the Ducks, he should be starting on Friday regardless. He absolutely should. What I don't get is Dean did a really good job at the beginning of the year because both goalies were playing so well that he was mixing it up at a very nice pace. It was almost right down the middle.
I liked it.
As I just told you, since April 10th, three starts for Kapo Kakkonen, and I'm not going to do the math and tell you this up right in front of me, but about 10 starts for Cam Talbot over that span. So you need to give Kapo some time here. Absolutely give him some time and rest up Cam Talbot. And it's not like, the thing is, it's not like this is a Stalock situation or a complete disaster situation like in San Jose right now. Like this is Kapo. This is a goalie who's been playing well. And it was the rookie goalie of the month and won nine straight starts not too long ago. Give him some time. Give him some time this weekend. Absolutely.
All right. I want to talk about the Ek-Foligno-Greenway line, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ek, fantastic. Comes to play. Got some skill. Certainly can score goals. Marcus Foligno contributes one or two things minimum every game. Tonight, he fought.
Yep.
He is not the world's most skilled player, but he does have a skill set. But if nothing else, he continually stands up for teammates. Marcus Foligno, beyond a shadow of a doubt, knows what Marcus Foligno is supposed to do, and he executes that on pretty much a nightly basis, okay? Which leaves us with one player that I want to discuss with you. And tonight he played 16 minutes and 50 seconds. So he saw substantial playing time for a forward. Jordan Greenway.
Go ahead.
I am absolutely, if I was a parent, I'm not mad. I'm disappointed, Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you? What tonight's game, Declan Goff, was a Greenway special. Heavy, hard hitting. I'm not saying you have to fight. If you elect to fight to stand up for your teammates, good for you. I respect that. But this is not saying you have to fight. But this is saying, how is it, and I think I turned to you in the press box and said this in the third period, how is it that you can go a game with that line, which, by the way, we all like a lot. It's a good line. It's got two guys that work their butts off. And a third guy who, when he elects to show up, is really effective and really good and can score goals and has skill. Jordan Greenway has skill. This is what gets me. But far too often, and he did get off to a really good start after Billy Garrett talked to him and I think basically said, I might trade you if you don't do more. How is it that Jordan Greenway so often seems to pregame, stop at the restaurant and buy the Charlie Coyle special? Because my God, if you want to be Charlie Coyle, Jordan, that's what, and you are better than that. You're more skilled than that. You are counted on a line that your head coach loves. And I'm not saying he should be benched, but I am saying, are you telling me, Declan Goff?
Yep.
That there's not more to give there, because I struggle. And he was credited, just to be clear tonight. He had a shot on goal. He had two hits. He had two blocks. So there are statistics, but he was the one entity to that line in a game that should have just been right up his alley where I was disappointed.
Yeah. He logged, almost 17 minutes tonight. One shot on goal, as you said, a couple hits, a couple block shots. In general, Jordan Greenway's having his best season of his career, and it's not close. All of his points but one have become on even strength scoring. So even strength 5-on-5. He's been damn good. But in general, either I need to see who you want to be, Jordan. Like that's the biggest thing. That's what Bill Guerin basically, I think, same thing, had the same conversation with them. So who do you want to be? Do you want to be a big body that plays 15 and a half minutes a night, collects a paycheck, plays into your 30s, plays 10 to 12 years, has maybe a couple runs in the playoffs, has a nice career, a nice little career, and obviously set for life, and your kids are set for life, whatever, millionaire here and there. But with the way he started off and with his role on that line, I would love to see him shoot the puck a little bit more. Joel Eriksson Ek doesn't score goals because he's more talented than the other teams. He scores more goals because he works his ass off, right, and he actually shoots the puck and he actually does things that are going to create opportunities for goals. Jordan Greenway is leaps and bounds, just from a talent side, leaps and bounds more talented than Joel Eriksson Ek. And I really don't think it's close. It's on a pure hockey talent level. In terms of work ethic and will, there's a big difference. I think Joel Eriksson Ek works a hell of a lot harder. He's a better skater. He obviously plays a center, so there's more responsibilities. I think in general, Jordan Greenway has more talent and more tools in the tool shed, if you will, to be a better player than Joel Eriksson Ek. But for whatever reason, there are just games where he coasts, or he maybe just gets comfortable with the role of, I'm going to play 16 minutes, I'm going to be the big body, and then I'll let Marcus Foligno score all the goals. And for whatever reason, Foligno has found a scoring touch, to your point where there's one or two things a night that Marcus Foligno does that you notice, right? Like, you notice.
When's the last time that you said you either didn't, to exactly what you just said, notice him, or you said Marcus had a bad game? When's the last time? I can't think of the last time that I thought, and believe me, his first year here, awful. I thought he had nothing but bad. Yeah, so exactly. I'm not like a Marcus Foligno stan.
No,
I've seen him play and thought he's been terrible, but you know, I don't anymore.
I remember when we were able to go in the locker room, like, which feels like forever ago. And I was able to talk to Jordan Greenway. There was a different demeanor than him than Coyle. There was a different demeanor to him than Coyle, and I could tell that this was a kid that was special and wanted to be really, truly great. And you know what? I think if you're Bill Guerin at this point, he might be someone that is probably exposed in the expansion draft. I still think these backwards trades, these behind-the-door trades, happen still on expansion draft day for Seattle. They might just not happen to the requisite and to the level that it did when Vegas entered the league.
Yeah, I don't
but
think it will. I agree
at
with
the
that.
Same time, if you're a Wild fan right now, you're unfortunately the best case scenario is Jordan Greenway gets taken in the expansion draft. I think that is your best case scenario. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I also have, so my other problem of late too has been, and I'm torn here because his skill set again is attractive. Dumba had the giveaway on the first Golden Knights goal tonight, which was a bad one. He's got to tighten it up, too, for the playoffs. I mean, Dumba brings things. And here's what I really – so there's two things that Dumba did tonight that I really didn't like because they are counterproductive. One is obviously no duh. You can't lose the puck, and it becomes what? I think a two-on-one for the Golden Knights, and they score. That was the first one. There was another one that we both saw and you actually called out at the time. He got the puck sort of at the point in the Vegas zone and had every chance in the world to shoot. And I think he tried to pass it or something. Yeah, and it was like, Matthew, that's, dude, you have, well, and I believe he has the best slap shot for the defenseman on that team, right?
100%. 100%.
So
yes.
Yeah, you don't be afraid to shoot the puck, dude. There's something about his game of late that seems to be off, and it's been off for a long enough time period now that it concerns me, because when he screws up defensively, that's how you lose playoff games.
Yep.
Like you're not going to win playoff games. If he becomes a liability on the blue line, you've got problems, because all it takes is one or two bad plays, Dex, mm-hmm. and you're in big trouble.
Yep, and you have to take the lumps with Matt Dumba. You have to understand that he's going to make a defensive boneheaded play, which exactly, case in point, it happened tonight, where it literally leads to a goal and puts his goalie and his team in a poor situation. But he's also got a slap shot, and he's got a skill set that is a rarity in the NHL right now. You know, Cal Makar right now in Colorado is probably the favorite to win the Norris. You know, he, in classic hockey fashion, he deflected and said, I don't think I should win it or I shouldn't be a finalist. Okay, Cal Makar, just seriously, dude, you're unbelievable. Just admit you're unbelievable. I'd rather say that you're really good than deflect. I hate that. But Dumba needs to really check himself a little bit. And he's with someone like Jonas Brodin, who is going to help him out. Jonas Brodin, like, yeah. Even as someone, look, I love hockey. I love watching it in person, I think, and especially from where we're at in a higher up situation in the press box. We're fortunate to be up there. The game looks a lot slower, and it looks a hell of a lot easier when you're watching it from all the way up there. Even I have been able to notice the defensive plays that Jonas Brodin is able to stop and prevent every night. And to our Pat Royce, our buddy Pat Royce, I just want him to score more goals. And to this year's credit, he has been scoring more goals. But his defensive prowess is so damn good. He's in the right places every time. His stick is always there. It's honestly insane. I wish there was better statistics that were traditional that could measure what he truly, truly brings night in and night out. But to your point about Dumba, those kind of situations are going to lead to bad times in the playoffs, and they absolutely can't happen.
Oh, you can't do that.
They can't.
So the good news for the Wild tonight is they get a point. They lose an OT. That's the bad news. The good news is that the Sharks actually held on to beat the Avs 3-2.
Yep.
So with four games left in their season now in the West Division, Vegas in first place with 76 points, Colorado in second place with 72 points, but the Wild with back-to-back games at home Friday, Saturday coming up against the Ducks, who are in the cellar of the division with 41 points. The Wild is only a point behind the Avs, and they are 15 clear of the Blues. The Blues had a chance to clinch tonight. They didn't do it, but I think that they will. Mm-hmm. So the good news is that the Wild still has a decent chance, actually, to put themselves in a position to get probably second place, not first place, probably. But that comes back to the discussion that we've been having for a couple weeks now, which is home ice against the Avs. Could be a big deal. Last change. You've got your fans. If you have to play a final game, I'd much prefer, if I was the Wild, to have the matchups against the MacKinnon line be exactly what I wanted and not have to scurry to get guys off and on. So that is the good news. On our next show, since we've been going so long tonight, Declan, let's talk about Zach Parise's playing time and his future, because it's interesting, but it deserves a full segment of conversation.
Okay. I was surprised they didn't bring it up so far. So, okay.
Well, yeah. And I'd like to bookend that discussion with something that you brought up in the press box tonight, which is, would they bring up Matthew Boldy for the playoffs? Because I think that there's a discussion to be had there, and I think there's going to be, I think you've got some decisions to make about who gets scratched and who does not. And I will tell you right now, I do not think Victor Rask does. Oh, and yeah, you know what? I forgot this one. Let's go back on this for 1 second. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I forgot. Okay. Just to be very clear, folks, Victor Rask was on the ice again in the second turn. So the second shift of the 3-on-3, and he was on the ice when Pietrangelo scored the goal to give the Golden Knights the win, okay? Victor Rask, I heard this tonight that there was, I don't know if I heard it or saw it on Twitter, but the explanation was, well, if Fiala plays, he's in there instead of Rask. So that's why. The last overtime game that the Wild played, Victor Rask was on the ice. It was Saturday night against the Blues, and they won. And that's the one where he sort of dove to set up Kevin in the exact same shift. So, ladies and gentlemen, I will have you know, Dean Evason right now is playing Victor Rask on the second turn of 3-on-3, and it has nothing to do with Fiala, okay? And I can't explain it. I don't know why. There are mysteries. There are mysteries in the world. There are mysteries in everything. This is a mystery to me.
Yeah.
And I can't, and look, we both said this. He had a good game tonight. Victor Rask played well. This is not a Victor Rask bashing session. Why you would play a guy that slow? Why you would play what right now he is a less talented Mikko Koivu at the end of Koivu's career.
That's so, even
or below that?
Way below it. I think even most
whatever
of
you want to say.
Personally,
this is the one I don't get. So
that was bad. Can't have it.
Almost forgot that one.
Can't have it. Even with how well he played tonight, which if I can get the regulation performance from Victor Rask night in and night out, yeah, I'll change my tune. And by the way, yes, he was traded for Nino Niederreiter. It was a horrible trade. He's having his best year of his Wild tenure, and it still ain't good enough. Well, raise your expectations, people.
And tonight, in regulation, he played well. Do you know why? Because he wasn't put with people who were so superior to him, he couldn't keep up. He was with Johansson, who's a better skater and a smooth player, but sort of decides shift by shift, am I gonna work hard on this one? And Bonino, who works his ass off every shift, okay? But he's not a star player. He's not even close. So Victor Rask was actually put on a line. I appreciate it. I told you that. He belongs on this line. This is fine. But 3-on-3, I don't get it. All right, hold on a second. So I got my flag back out.
Get your flag.
This is the State of Hockey 2003.
Hold on, actually.
This is the 2003 run that the Wild made, Western Conference Finals. And you've got your Wild Mask.
Branded mask.
Okay. And again, before anybody thinks, very nice that this is, that we have bashed this team. This was a Kirill Kaprizov appreciation show because the man is unbelievable. Justin Jefferson, Byron Buxton, Kirill Kaprizov. Say your thing, Declan.
Pass, shoot, score.
Bye.
Wear a mask, get a vaccine. Goodbye.